podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Discount Tire, we know your time is valuable. Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Did you know Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Check out our current deals at DiscountTire.com or stop in and talk to an associate today. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Welcome back to another episode of Soccer Supernova with me, Amy Canavan. Today I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by the former Celtic youth product, Paul Shields. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good, Amy. Thanks. Appreciate you inviting me on.
Absolutely. How's lockdown been treating you?
This one's been all right. The first one, I must admit, I did find tough. Obviously, just not being able to do anything and stuff. This one's been slightly different in that I've been able to work, so I'm still going out and to be honest, not much has changed for me really. I've actually enjoyed this one because, like I say, I'm out working, I'm still getting like social interaction with people. I've quite enjoyed this one, but the one before was, I wouldn't want to go back to that again.
It was a bit tough, wasn't it?
It was. Like, I think it was just a shock to everyone.
Yeah.
But I think really as well, it's taught us all quite a bit as well, do you know what I mean? I think it kind of made us all step back a little bit and realise what's important to us, spending a bit more time with family. But let's be honest, we were all delighted when it opened up again and we could start getting back to work.
Absolutely, we certainly were. So before we get into what's been keeping you busy these days, let's go right back to the start. Yeah. Where did the football dream really begin for you?
Really just as young as I can remember, to be honest. I was always, my dad and my granddad were always taking me to games from as soon as I could go, really. And so just at school, constantly playing football with my mates, and was a huge Rangers fan. Like I say, my dad, my granddad were always taking me to Ibrox, which I'm sure you'll pick up on later on. So just that, you know, in my head, I was just always going to be a footballer. And then the minute I could join a team, I was straight into it and joined, I think it was Hillabeath when I was 12. So yeah, from that moment on, that was all in my head. I was going to be a footballer, end of story. And to be honest, I'm grateful that I was able to do it.
Was it always going to be a striker?
I think so, yeah. I always wanted the glory. Not that it really happened very much in the professional career, but that was it. I'll be honest, I was all about the glory, scoring goals. For me, that's what football was all about.
So you're kicking about in Fife. Was it, obviously, a Rangers fan, but Raith Rovers came calling, that's a big local team, how was that when?
So that was good. At that time, I did had a few options. Dundee United, I had a chance to go there, but you're right, Raith was a local one. They made a real effort to get me, which I think is what impressed me more than anything. And you know, I had Alex Smith, and he came out to the house one time. I knew that the youth team coaches there were Terry Butcher, John Brownlee, you know, such massive names. And for me, obviously, Terry Butcher was a big draw. Obviously, Jimmy Nicol was the first team manager as well, so it was kind of a no-brainer. At that point, I had left school and I started working. My dad got me a job as an apprentice draftsman, so it was like a four-year apprenticeship, and I hated every minute of it. So the minute, I think I was playing for a team called Milton Green at the time, and the minute I got an opportunity, that was all I was ever doing. But you know, the job actually, it turned out quite a good pull really, because I was earning better money. in that. My dad, I don't know how he managed to do it, but he spoke to Raith and managed to get me what I was earning at that job as an apprentice draftsman instead of the actual, I think it was like 50 quid a week the boys were getting. So I managed to go and get a wee bit more than the rest of them. Which, to be fair, a few of them did start to find out about it. I'm not sure how, but it didn't go down too well.
So Jimmy Nicol and Terry Butcher in that setup, how much interaction did you have with them even at such a young age?
Constantly, it was constant. The youth team and the first team all trained like on the same patch. We all travelled together, going up to Beveridge Park. We all ate together. So much, like, when I look back on that, they were tough on us. Like, I can't lie, they were really tough on us. But honestly, I look back on that period of time, and I think anyone who was in that setup will agree with me that it was amazing. It was just a great time. As I say, they had us doing things like, you know, even just the jobs we were doing. You know, sometimes we weren't leaving there till 5:30, 6 o'clock, sitting there waiting on getting the green light to go home. And you know, Alex Smith would then have a wee wander around and run his finger across a door frame that had never been walked through in years, find some dust, and then all of a sudden a group of us have got the dusters out trying to get it all cleaned up. And little things like that, we cursed it at the time, but you look back, it was amazing. And you know, they had even had us going down to Long Annet pits. We had to go and do a shift down the pits, like, with the rest of the, and I remember thinking, like, this is crazy, like, and you probably wouldn't be allowed to do it now, but honestly, looking back, and Alex Smith was always saying that he was doing it because he wanted us to see how good we had it, and it definitely worked. It was, to be honest, it was a great thing, and I think most young players should do stuff like that now. And I know it probably will never happen, but it was certainly good for us.
That integration with the first team as well, does it give you that drive to be, I want to be one of those guys and not be that youth, just be a youth product?
It definitely does. I think we had such a good group, and the first team guys were brilliant as well. As I say, we cleaned all their boots, and there was always banter. They were just in the away changing room, they were in the home changing room, we were in the away changing room, so we were right next to each other. And you start to look up to them, you start to see them, you know, and be scoring goals, getting a little bit of publicity here and there, and you really start to look up to them and just want to be, first and foremost, you want to be doing what they're doing. So, you know, it was brilliant. It was just such a good time that I look back on and always have a little smile about it.
So you're kicking around Raith, and then, as you said, Rangers fan. How does Celtic come along then?
That was just totally out of the blue. I seem to remember playing a game. We played Airdrie, and it was a closed doors game. And I do remember at the start of it, a few people saying that it was actually John Barnes was at the game. And I didn't know whether he was or he wasn't. But I since found out that he was at the game, and he was there to watch me. So I played, can't remember if I scored or anything, but I do remember being quite happy with how I played. And then before you know it, I just remember the manager pulling me in and saying that we've had an offer from Celtic. And it was such a strange thing for me because, as I say, I had went from joining Raith Rovers at 16. And in joining Raith Rovers, that was when I stopped going to Rangers games because I obviously couldn't go on a Saturday. But still had my season ticket in my name. Which I gave to another family member. So I just remember thinking how surreal it was. The whole thing was just strange. And there had been actually talk before about when I first broke into the first team, there was a few things about Rangers that were interested. There was always little bits here and there. And again, I remember playing there was a closed doors game at Ibrox, and I had went through. I wasn't due to play in it because I had been playing with the first team, so I was getting saved for that. And I just remember someone saying to me, look, you have to play in this game today. So obviously I kind of got a feeling that it was because they wanted to see me. I didn't have boots or anything like that, and before you know it, someone's came running through, and I had to wear Tony Vidmar's boots, believe it or not. They were about two sizes too big. So anyway, I played in the game, obviously didn't play too well, so nothing else came of that. But yeah, the Celtic thing was strange, I have to admit. It was, and then, like you say, when family members and everyone started to get wind of it, it was just bizarre, because my whole family was was Rangers fans, but at the end of the day, it was you're not going to say no to Kenny Dalglish.
Exactly. I was just going to touch on that. What was your dad and your granddad's reaction to that? Obviously, it's hard to turn down Celtic, but obviously,
yeah. I mean, that's something that still kind of gets to me this day. Really, is just I always think about my granddad in this situation, and you know, he was the biggest Rangers fan going. He's always buying the Rangers news every week, and whenever I was at his house when I was younger, I would sit and read these, and he kept them all for me. He piled them up, and then before you know it, because he was that proud, he was then buying like the Celtic Weekly magazine, and he was piling them up. And you know, they were at my first game when I played at Celtic Park in Stavordine. They were there, and they were proud. Like, I can't lie, they were proud, and it was nice. You know what I mean? It was nice. That's all I think you want when you're younger, is just to obviously make your family proud, especially your dad and your granddad, who have been taking you to all these games. But it was a nice moment to see them obviously swallowing their pride a little bit and going to Celtic Park to watch me.
You touched upon it, you were in fact Kenny Dalglish's last signing at Celtic.
Yeah.
How big an attraction was that? Obviously you're a striker yourself, again a Rangers fan as mm-hmm. he was, what was that pull like?
Huge, and I didn't know. Obviously, Kenny Dalglish is a legend, like for anyone that follows Scotland. But I hadn't seen much of him. Obviously, I was too young. But constantly informed again by dad, granddad, you know, and it did kind of become apparent from them that you know you can't say no to this man. Like, you know what I mean? And then obviously meeting him, he just had this aura about him that was incredible, that I just knew that's I was never saying no to him. It wouldn't have mattered what they offered me or anything like that. I was never saying no to him, and I just, when I look back on it, it's probably unfortunate he wasn't there much longer after I went, and maybe things might have been different, I don't know. But no, I was certainly not saying no to him, and he was a massive pull for me going there.
You're walking into Parkhead, and the team there is one of the best in the last 20-25 years, obviously. Yeah. At Celtic, your Larsons, your Suttons, your Hartsons. What's it like stepping in and as a young kid and seeing these massive names?
Again, really, really surreal in a way, do you know what I mean? Because I was still young, I was still, I think 18 maybe, you know, and young, and like you say, it just seemed like yesterday I was at school and I'm watching these guys, and then to step in and be training with them and seeing the way they worked, and just, you're right, they just had a total aura. But if I'm being totally honest, I think it got the better of me a lot of times, because I was just this kid from Fife, do you know what I mean, who just liked playing football, and then all of a sudden you're in the real world with these guys, and you're starting to having to think, Can I get past these guys? Do you know what I mean? And obviously it's a difficult job, a little bit overwhelming at times.
Do you believe when you first go in that you do have a chance and there is an opportunity there? You see, it's very tough with that front line in front of you. Mm-hmm. But is there any sort of indication that, wow, I maybe could break through here?
That's a good question. I think when I first went there, 100% I adopted that attitude. As time went on, I probably didn't, and that's I think only my issue. That's nobody else's issue. Nobody ever made me feel like I couldn't get in with these guys. And you know, I'd already made my debut, and but yeah, you know, I look at guys like Tommy Burns spent a hell of a lot of time with like the young guys. He wanted the best for us all the time. He always made us feel like we were the next best things. Like we were going to get in that first team, and I totally believe that. I just think it's a sink or swim moment where you know you're prepared to do the hard work, and I think I look back on it now with total regrets. I think I wish I didn't, and I was always told like don't have any regrets in football, but unfortunately that's definitely one of mine, where you know I was probably one of the first to leave training and stuff like that, and again 20 odd years on, if I look at that now, you know, I would change that decision in a heartbeat, but this is the way it goes.
How was the influence of Tommy?
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy. And we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Brilliant. I just loved him like everybody did. And, he would just notice things in you and take you aside and just strip everything back to basics for you, do you know what I mean? And that just that time he spent with you, the sort of the love that he felt he was giving every one of us, and I just thought he was an amazing person, he really was. And yeah, I mean, I don't have loads of dealings with him, you know, but he just, it didn't matter who you were, it didn't matter if, like, you know, you were probably someone who wasn't going to make the first team or whatever, he wanted to better you. And I think, again, it's not till he's kind of gone when people from that era, not just myself, will look at that and think, God, he really wanted the best for us. So I think we're all kind of grateful for that.
You said that maybe the attitude wasn't the best when you were leaving training a little bit early. Who in that squad was the best trainer at Celtic at that time?
We had guys like Liam Miller, we had Colin Healy, we had Jim Goodwin, who's obviously St Mirren manager just now, Liam Keogh, who I think went on to play for Inverness, Mark Okoza, these sort of guys. I mean, they were all great guys. But yeah, guys like Liam Miller and that, you just knew that they separated themselves from it. In fact, Liam and Michael Doyle, it was, they two were really friendly, and we kind of all stayed in Diggs and Hamilton, and we were all kind of similar. And I do remember, Liam and Doyle are going to, I think they went to our house in Denmark on loan. And I don't know what happened to them, but it was almost like they just came back with a completely different attitude, and they almost like really separated themselves from the rest of us, and it paid off because they both went on to have brilliant careers. Obviously, Liam again went to Man United, and you know he was the best of that bunch. I think we all knew he was going to go on to bigger and better things.
Absolutely. So when you're at that time and it's not looking likely that you're breaking in, is the loan move a consequence of that, or is it you thinking I need to go out, try and improve myself to come back and get better?
Yeah, a bit of both, to be honest. Again, I had went from playing first team or being in around the first team at Raith Rovers, and then going to Celtic, and you're involved in reserve squads that are playing on a Monday afternoon. And you know, again, I look back and I shouldn't knock that, but at the time that's what I was doing. I was honestly thinking, like, God, this is nonsense, you know what I mean? Like, Monday afternoon, and what would happen at that time, because you would be told you're playing from the Saturday, you would be told you're playing on the Monday in the reserve game, and then whoever didn't play on the first team, whoever it may be, whoever was on the bench and didn't play, and if they needed games, you were basically told right before it, by the way, you're not playing today because the manager says that we have to play whoever, which again is absolutely fine because that's the way big clubs run and you have to accept it. But for me, it was just another thing just to think, God, this is rubbish. So I just wanted to play Saturday football. I just loved the, you know, having a little bit of a crowd there and being able to score and go home and check the table at night and stuff like that. I know you'd made a little bit of a difference because that's what I'd been doing, and I felt like I was missing that. So yeah, they wanted me to go on loan, and I was obviously quick to take them up on it as well.
So you drop down leagues, and it's Albion Rovers, there's Clydebank, and there's Queen of the South in between as well. Do you feel a drop in quality, or do you just feel, as you say, you're getting first team football on a Saturday, yeah, and that's fundamentally all that really matters?
That's all I felt. I mean, the Albion Rovers one was John McVeigh, because he was my manager at Raith for a while, so he was really wanting me to go there. And like I say, at that point, I just wanted to play games. So I didn't really mind for who. Like, I've never been, you know, bothered about, like, you're right, I just wanted to play games, I just wanted to score goals, and I wanted to be, I suppose, you just want to be appreciated in a way, do you know? So, yeah, definite drop in quality, of course it is, because you've went from training with guys who are raising standards every day to guys who it's not really a priority for them, and they've got jobs out with that. So again, looking back, would I change the decision? I probably would if it was, and I probably would think, no, I need to play football, but I still need to go where there's, you know, that drive in everybody to try and better you as well, as an individual.
I know you've mentioned you maybe didn't appreciate the reserve league quite as much. Mm-hmm. Do you understand now, though, we talk about it quite a lot and you're looking back, and that's the issue really in Scotland, that there's not that bridge between youth football, yeah, and then that first team. Do you think there is a room for that reserves league to come back?
Yeah, I think so, to be honest. Yeah, I do. Because I look at kids now, and, you know, they're protected in a way with our, like, under 20 league or whatever, under 19, and they keep going. It's like it's always an under something league, and it's just like, you know, you have to play against men. Do you know what I mean? You do. That you have to play against someone who wants to boot you up and down, because it is all character building. And also, like I said there, you know, we were getting an opportunity to play against, like, an Aberdeen first team player or a Rangers first team player whenever we played on these Monday games. So yeah, you need that. Do you know what I mean? And I would love to see. I would love to see it back. Whether it does or not, I don't know, because I think it's again, just looking at, like, the young players when I've been working at Hearts and stuff like that, I think they would love it. You know what I mean? They would thrive on it. It would be tough for them, but at the end of the day, it would go back to that, what I said, a kind of sink or swim moment, and it would separate the ones who are really wanting it enough and prepared to learn from those experiences and the ones who aren't.
Absolutely. And it was an all doom and gloom at Celtic, obviously, and you did make your debut there. Yeah. What was that moment like?
Yeah, mad. It was just, I remember being, you know, just that going through in the changing rooms and seeing your shirt with your name and your number on it. Like, I will never forget that. It was like total pinching myself, and even now I feel it a little bit strange, because you're just like, as much as I had grown up a Rangers fan, like, Celtic are a huge club, and I think when you go there, it is installed in you how big this club is. And, you know, we'd often, like, go trips abroad and what have you, and the fan base was massive, so I knew it was a big deal. And you're almost like, I remember being, I think, was I on the, no, that was after I was on the bench, but I was obviously on the bench for this one against Aberdeen, and I seen the way the game was going, and I think it was something like 3-1 at half time, and I just remember being in the change rooms, and it was Colin Healy had said to me, he'd, like, shouted me over, because I say we lived in the same digs together, and he was like, you'll get on here, that's what he said. And I just remember thinking, that's, like, almost like, can't believe it. And then obviously when you get the call and you're going on, and I think I came on for Matt Burchell. It was good. It's one moment that, you know, as much as I've got regrets, that can never be taken away from me. And I think that there's so many people would love to have experienced that. Do you know what I mean? And I'm just glad I got to. It was a nice moment.
Touched upon it earlier that maybe if Kenny Dalglish was in the role a bit longer, things could have panned out differently. Do you think under Martin O'Neill there was never really that room for you to get into that first team squad?
There wasn't. I think when Kenny Dalglish was there, and I was training with the first team almost every day, and then he left, and then it was, I had a total shift on that. I was then with the reserves all the time. Again, probably being so young, my attitude wasn't great to that. Do you know what I mean? And I should have just thought, right, knuckle down and let's show him. But I didn't. I kind of adopted the other attitude of, like, oh well, that'll be that then. And again, another regret of mine. But yeah, so I never really had many dealings with Martin O'Neill. And I think I had an instance when I was at Clyde Bank on loan, and I got Player of the Month, and I did an interview, and one of the journalists, for whatever reason, he just started asking me about, you know, what Martin O'Neill thought about me getting Player of the Month, and obviously I was like, I said, well, I don't know, And he was saying, oh, what, has he not phoned you? And I was like, well, no, I've not spoke with him. And he said, do you not think he cares about like what you're doing? And I said, well, I don't know, you'd have to ask him. And it was just basically like that. And I just remember seeing the back page. Well, it was actually Kenny McDowell phoned me at my house the following day, and he was just saying, like, you know, what have you said? And the manager's not happy. And of course, I was like defending myself. I said, look, I haven't said anything bad. And Martin O'Neill, remember, phoned me, and it was probably one of the only dealings I really had with him. But he obviously wasn't happy with the. I think he took my side of the story, because, like I say, there was more than one journalist there, and it was only one that went with that. And to be fair, he did apologise after it, but by that time it was too late. It didn't look great for me, and don't know whether that was a factor or whatever, but it certainly is not going to endear you, is it, to someone of Martin O'Neill's stature?
Not at all. Did that then kind of make the exit a little bit easier, or did it rush it along? Or
I think they did. I mean, I think that was at Clyde Bank, so yeah, it wasn't long after that before they were contacting me and saying, like, obviously you can leave. And I mean, that was tough in itself as well. But again, whether it was a factor, I'll never know. It probably was in a way. Do you know what I mean? Maybe a final thing of, right, let's, you know, we need to make a decision on him here, if I'm looking back on it like that. But I don't know, who knows.
How big a moment when it becomes apparent that obviously time at Celtic's coming to an end, is it quite surreal in the sense that, well, how do I come back from this? Mm-hmm. Does the career sort of go a little bit questionable? Or
does. I think people, again, I just wanted to play. I just wanted to play, like, on a Saturday. That's what I felt I loved doing. And you're right. Like, again, looking back, it seemed a big deal for everyone that would be saying to me, like, you know, where what are you going to do now, sort of thing. And I never really thought of it like that. I just, like I say, I did just want to play. Again, I can see that point of view totally now. And I kind of wish I did think like that, because things would have changed. But I remember leaving there actually and feeling a little bit relieved that I wasn't going to have to go in there every day, because it was becoming Groundhog Day. So yeah, I was a bit relieved, and I just wanted to go and play football.
Did you find a little bit of joy again then when you signed professionally, obviously, for Clyde?
Yeah, so I did. So I went there and really enjoyed it again, because, like I say, it was first team football. You were playing again on the Saturday, and there was big characters as well in the change rooms, like, you know, guys like John Potter and Alan Kernahan as a manager as well. So I did. I really enjoyed it. It was just great to be back and just be part of a first team. So yeah, I loved it.
When you continue your career in those lower leagues, is there a expectation that you think to get back to it? Are you known as the guy who was at Celtic, the guy who was signed by Dalglish? Does it carry?
It did. It, honestly, it did. Like, every, it was like that, and not for me. I don't think I ever thought of it that way, but you're right, loads of people, and every time, even if you scored a goal for, you know, one of these lower league teams, it would always say, like, ex-Celtic player. It was always coming out all the time. So I do think that, yeah, a lot of people saw me that way, and it did become a little bit of a burden for me in a way. Do you know what I mean? Because I did just want to play, but I felt like I had to always live up to this expectancy that I always had to. If I'm playing for, you know, Clyde or Forfar, that I need to be the one that's on top all the time, because I'm an ex-Celtic player and they paid money for me. So I probably started to put myself under a little bit of pressure.
How did you enjoy your time up at Forfar?
I really enjoyed it, actually. It was totally different to what I'd been used to. Obviously, it was part-time. I went and got a job alongside it as well, and it was just, again, another experience that made me probably realise that actually I need to get my head together if I want to continue being full-time football, or if I don't, I need to obviously just accept that. And it really did make.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Make me knuckle down and think, actually, I don't like this training two nights a week. I prefer to do it every day. But again, that's such a terrible decision from my part, because that's an inability to realise, I should have realised long before that, that that, was, that would have eventually happened. But I always get there, it's just it's usually a long journey.
Is it tough to make that step from full time to part time?
Yeah, it totally is. And as I say, you know, everything changes from that point on, financially, and your life totally changes, because see, you have to start looking, you know, you're going to get a job, your training times are totally different now. All of a sudden you're having your dinner at 4:30 and you're in the car away up the motorway to Forfar, do you know what I mean? So it's not ideal, but yeah, it's tough, to be honest. It was tough.
You get that goal at Forfar, I think it's an assist from David Dunn, and it gets you that move to Gillingham. That's a step up again, isn't it? You've got to get a bit of joy there.
I definitely do. I don't know how that happened, and the boys at Hearts, John Sewer used to always wind me up about that, saying it's probably one of the craziest moves in Scottish football, which it is if I look at it like that. And I don't actually know how it came about. I just know that Neil Cooper, I think, tried to get me at, was it Ross County? I think he tried to get me there, and he ended up going to Gillingham, and for whatever reason they've made contact with whoever, and before you know it, I'm carting down the road to there. So bizarre. Again, I don't know many people that would make a move like that now, unless they were really young and a prospect.
So it was Neil Cooper who took you down?
So it was Neil Cooper, yeah, I signed for Neil Cooper, and instantly loved him. I think he was just such a nice guy, and unfortunately I feel like I let him down on a few occasions, just with behaving quite badly and stuff, which is a total regret of mine as well. But there's a bit of a theme here, I think you can see. But it was for him, and I loved him. I thought he was brilliant. Just wanted to play for him as much as possible.
You are still quite young, and obviously you get that move down to England. Do you think you missed a big time?
I don't know if I did, to be honest, because again, I had just came from having a job. Like, I was working with the council, you know, with, like, basically cutting grass and chopping down trees and stuff like that. And I remember Neil Cooper saying that when my first game, I think it was against Portsmouth, and I'd played really well. And when he got interviewed, he said something along those lines of, like, a few weeks ago he was chopping down trees. And so I never really had it. I wasn't really big time. At this point, I'm kind of appreciating, kind of appreciating what I have, knowing that I've seen another side to life, and had that early learning curve, but again, I don't think it made any difference. I probably, as I say, let him down a couple of times just with stupid nights out and stuff, and but it was good. I don't regret it. I regret a lot of the decisions that I made down there. I was down there myself, didn't have my family with me, and probably was doing things I shouldn't have been.
I was just going to ask that. Do you think, being still so young, you've came from Forfar, like you say, it's not a transition many people have made. Do you think the club need to give you more support, or somebody just needs to maybe have that arm around you a little bit more?
Possibly, yeah, possibly. You know, I've never actually thought of it like that. And I can't complain. Football is a tough environment, and you are ultimately thrown in at the deep end at some point in your life. You know, you can't constantly have people nursing you along. It's tough. So again, maybe that's something that should have happened. But I've no regrets with anyone down there. No problems with anyone down there. They looked after me. They were really good. They got me settled in a house and stuff, and made sure I had a car and stuff like that. They made sure I was all right, and then they brought Stephen Hislop down as well, actually, for just not long after I'd been, so I had another Scotsman there to bounce off as well.
Sweet,
so
it matters worse.
I know, it actually did. That's the thing, is it actually, I remember being delighted, obviously, that Hizzy was coming down, because it was another Scottish guy, but again, two of us, for whatever reason, probably shouldn't have been allowed out together.
Not at all. So obviously then you come back up the road, and it's to Livingston.
Yeah.
Rangers fan growing up, but just a goal scoring hero in John Robertson, that must have been such an attraction.
It was, and again, I think Robbo had tried to get me before I went to Gillingham, and I really wanted to sign for him because of that, because he was a striker. So he kind of kept in touch with me, and I do remember driving up, and I had my oldest boy with me, Jack, and we drove up to Livingston, I think it was a Friday, and I went in and I signed the contract and stuff, and I came back out and I had to drive all the way back down to England, and I just remember thinking to myself, what have I done? And then I hate to say that, but I just thought, what have I done? I knew instantly I'd made the wrong decision and I'd signed the contract. But again, you kind of block it out. You just think, right, this is, you've got to do it, you've got to go. But I'd worked so hard, I felt, to get away from Scotland, and I had a few options in England at the time. But I was a little bit, I don't know if I was homesick. I certainly was saying I was homesick. I was missing my kids more than anything. And probably used that as an excuse of thinking, right, this is the right move. But I'll never forget that feeling of just thinking, I don't know what I've done here. And it went sour pretty quickly, probably because of maybe I wasn't fully invested in it. My time at Gillingham, I was on my own an awful lot, and started to struggle a little bit, just like mentally and stuff, just because of that time I spent constantly on my own in my flat. And I don't think the scars of that had really lifted, and by the time I'd came back up, I was kind of losing a wee bit of direction again.
What did make it initially, just that feeling that knowing it was the wrong move altogether?
I think it was just that I very much liked I liked change. I liked the thought of going sample, and even now I still want to go and like see different environments, like different countries and what have you. I like to sample all that, and I had been at a stage where I had played in pretty much every ground in Scotland. You know, I was at a stage where every time I played against a team, I knew someone from the other team, and often you'd be playing right up against them. And it just, I don't know, it was just felt like it was a motivation of mine to get away from that and to try and challenge myself with something else. I got there. The move to Gillingham didn't obviously work out because Neil left again pretty sharpish, and the guy that came in, we didn't really get on great, and I think I still did play a few games for him. But I just worked so hard. I felt like I'd put in a lot of hard work to get myself away from Scotland. Not that there's anything wrong with playing in Scotland, I just wanted to sample something else. And remember just having a few options, and I was like, no, it always stuck in my mind that Robbo wanted me before I went to Gillingham, and I really wanted to work for him. I just couldn't turn the Gillingham move down. So I think that was what, he was the draw that kept pulling me back there. As I say, I think I realised pretty early on that it wasn't a great one.
How do you look back on your time at Livingston then?
Not fondly, to be honest. It's such a strange club, Livingston, and I still speak to, obviously I've been working up at St Johnston recently, and I still speak to Murray Davidson quite a few times about the time there. Listen, it was good fun and great bunch of guys, but Livingston was such a strange club at the time. I think they were going through like transitions as well, and the board, and they'd just been relegated as well, so they were kind of in that transition period where they're expecting to go straight back up, but probably there was a few scars from the last couple of seasons, and it just wasn't great. It wasn't that great an atmosphere, to be honest.
So you get that move to Sweden. Was that, did your time at Livingston really just, your mind was just wanting out?
Yeah, again, it was I wanted away from there, and I think I'm at this point starting to think about being abroad, like, do you know what I mean? And I say that to the young lads that I work with now, that I think there comes a point, like, I think when you're young, you want to play at the top level, and the top level really is, you know, playing the top level in Scotland, and then you've got like the Premiership in England. Like, you always want to reach that level, but there always comes a point where you think, right, that's actually not going to happen now, or it's less and less likely. And I always try and say to like the young lads now, I think if you reach that point, I think you should start thinking what else is out there, because you've got an unbelievable opportunity where you can go to these countries and you're getting paid to be there, and you get to see like a different side of life. Like, there is just far more to life than what goes on just here. So yeah, that move came about, and I jumped it. I was desperate to go over there, and I think we went for a few days, me and a boy called Daryl Smiley first. We went for like a few days. It was supposed to be a trial, but they told us like a trial over there is just really to see like how you fit in with the rest of the team. And then we went over for good. It was nice.
What was the level like over there?
Level was, it was all right. They were in like Division 1 at the time. The level was okay. I would probably liken it maybe to the Championship over here at that time. I think the Championship's got a lot stronger now. So yeah, it was good. Like, again, I was so enthusiastic, and when I feel that inside me, and I always, whenever I went to a new club, I was always desperate to prove that I was the best they had, and it was a kind of theme that carried me everywhere, that when I went I would always be flying for 5 or 6 games. You know, it was the same at Forfar, it was the same at Clyde. I was always flying for 5 or 6 games till I got myself to that point of where, and then for whatever reason I would take my foot off the pedal a little bit. So yeah, the level was all right. There was a lot of travelling involved, and it was just a nice time, to be honest. It was a really nice town, and I enjoyed it. I loved it.
After that, you take a little bit of a break from football. Why did you feel that you needed that break?
I got a bad injury in Sweden. Again, at that point, was probably just a little bit disillusioned with football. We had, you were signing like year contracts here and there, and Sweden, although it was great, they weren't great at paying you on time and stuff like that, and you always got paid, but it was always like touch and go. You're always like having to chase them, saying, look, where's this money? So things like that weren't good, and then I got the injury in a home game, and ended up in hospital, and I was in intensive care for a bit, and it was just at that point I just thought I've honestly had enough, and I wanted as far away from football at that point as possible, because it's tough. Like, it's such a tough industry. You're constantly feeling like you have to be on it every single day. Every single day in training you're getting judged, and you know, like, the majority of people like who have other jobs, if you're not feeling great one day, you can go in the office and you can like take a little bit of a breather, but the football industry is just not like that. You're constantly getting judged, and there's always someone who has an opinion on you, whether it be like a manager, a coach, another player, or just fans in general, and it's, you constantly are feeling like you have to be on top of your game, and it started to be a wee bit exhausting, I thought. So I'd honestly just had enough. And decided to step away, and then, typical of me, I regretted it about 3 months later.
I was just going to say, did you regret
totally
that?
Totally did. Again, I remember speaking to people at the time, and they were saying, just, you need to stay in football, like, as long as you can. Like, but I was being stubborn, and I was like, no, I've had enough. I think I've had enough of it. Stepped away and totally missed it. Like, just missed that. Everything I'm saying there about the pressure of playing, feeling like everyone judging you all the time, the environment itself, if you take that away, the environment itself is the best environment ever, and that's why I'm doing what I do at this moment in time, because I get the best of both worlds now, where I get to enjoy everything that goes on in the week. I get to enjoy all the banter, the build up to games, but I don't have to deal with running out there and taking pelters from people that don't even know you.
When you you're missing the buzz and all of that, was the ambition to get back into league football, or was the attraction of lower league football even more
just
enticing?
Honestly, nah, it wasn't. At that point, I genuinely did think like my professional career was finished, and I think it was Bo'ness United, I think, at the time, and I wasn't even fussed for going to them at this point. Then I went there, being totally honest, I went there for the money, it's not massive in like professional football terms, but at the time it was decent money for training twice a week, and you know, you were getting like a signing on fee and stuff, so I went for that reason. Wasn't fully invested in it, but the level was such that I could get away with it, because obviously I came from a higher level, and slowly but surely I did actually start to really enjoy it again. I started to look forward to Saturdays, started to look forward to training, but again, I think it was more down to the banter side of it. It's a different type of person when you go down to those levels, you know what I mean, because it is, you know, it's like proper people there, you know what I mean, they are going to work every day, and and it is, brings with it a different type of pressure, a different type of banter, and I did start to enjoy it again.
It is all about enjoyment at that level, and I think of being the Super League in that. Mm. Obviously won the title as well. Silverware helps no matter what level.
Yeah, you know, it does. It was good. Like, and I hadn't won anything really when I played. Like, every club I seemed to be at, we were fighting relegation all the time. And again, I look back and I think that's probably another reason why I wasn't, I wasn't so, it wasn't such a big decision to leave football, because I didn't have many amazing moments, you know what I mean, where you can recall that and think, right, this is why I need to keep going, because I want more of that. A lot of it was fighting relegation and stuff. And so to go into like the junior leagues and realise as well that actually they were quite big as well. Like, some of the teams have got decent fan base and following, and I think you start to realise that it means a hell of a lot to the people running these clubs, and they put so much into it. And I used to think about that a lot, and even, let's say, times when I've worked for Bonnyrigg and stuff, I always think about the guys like behind the scenes and see the work that goes into it, and it means so much to them. So that kind of rubs off, and you almost want the best for them. You want them to feel amazing at the end of their Saturday night when they're all out drinking with their pals.
Absolutely, and you touched on it, obviously you did make your way through Bonnyrigg, God's country, and you played for the Rose. So at that level, do you think people snub their nose a little bit? Looking at, obviously, they are now in the Lowland League, and back then it would just still be the junior leagues, but do you think there is a general snub off the nose?
I think so. I think there definitely used to be. I would say now not so much within the game, but given certain decisions that have been taken recently, you would have to say that there kind of is that. There is that there from the top, which is unfortunate, because, you know, most people I speak to within football do talk highly of, like, Bonnyrigg and teams like that are up and coming, and they're so desperate to challenge, and they would be such an asset to the leagues. Even starting in the third division, they would be such an asset because they're ambitious, and they would almost raise the standard instantly of everyone else. But it just seems that there's a bit of a comfort zone for a lot of teams that, you know, as long as they stay in the league and as long as they get their wee parachute payment at the end of it, then they're quite happy. And it's just unfortunate that it seems like at the top they seem to endorse that mentality, which is wrong. But no, certainly from people within the game, I would say there's a lot of respect for clubs like Bonnyrigg.
Obviously, you won a title at Bonnyrigg as well, and I have to ask you, or I will be slated, how did you enjoy your time at New Dundas Park?
Honestly, I loved it. I really loved it. And I think the only way I can show that is that I still speak to Charlie. I still speak to all the guys down there. And honestly, I loved it. They just had such a brilliant, relaxed feeling about the place. They were great with my kids as well. Like, there was a stage where the kids couldn't get looked after on a Saturday, so I had to bring them to the games, and obviously they were young, and sometimes I'd be playing games and I'd see, like, my youngest one swinging on the barrier, and I'm thinking, like, what's he going to do? And but they were brilliant. Like, they took them in, like, they made sure they were well looked after. And I always remember one of the games where it was towards the end of my time at Bonnyrigg, where I kind of thought, this needs to change. And I just remember we were warming up, and my youngest one, I don't know what age he would have been at the time, probably about seven. And I just remember he's shouting me when we were doing, like, little possession boxes, and he's shouting, "Dad, Dad!" And I'm obviously ignoring him, and then eventually I've run over. I was like, "Liam, you can't do that when I'm working." And he was like, "I need the toilet." So he was bursting for the toilet, so I had to leave the warm up to go make sure he went to the toilet. So I think that was a bit of a realization that maybe I should try and fix this situation. But in terms of them down there, like, I can't speak highly enough of Bonnyrigg. I think they're a brilliant club. I still look out for the results just now, and I've went down there and helped them as much as I can as well.
Absolutely. So always welcome, by the way. So Bonnyrigg, and then there's Broxburn, and there's Kelly and that as well. Is it just a case of dwindling out the career by that point?
It was, yeah. I think it was always coming down to, every time I left a club, I was always thinking, right, that's me now. And it always became someone who I knew, at a club who would pick up the phone and say, look, any chance you could come? They were, and we're looking for a striker, any chance you could come? And it was like, I just couldn't say no. So I would just go and do what I could do and try and help as much as I can. And Kelty was exactly the same as that. It was like, they was just down to knowing, I knew Tam Courts. I'd played with him years previous. So he had said about coming along. And to be honest, I enjoyed it. Like, it became quite social. And I knew that's what it was about for me then. I just enjoyed playing the games. I felt like I got a little bit of hunger back. It was almost nice, like working on all through the weekend and getting a chance to take your anger out on some bricklayer on the Saturday. So it was good, and Kelty were good with me as well, because they allowed me to start doing what I'm doing just now as well, and I started doing like a bit behind the scenes with them as well. So that was kind of like my first little start of that.
So tell us exactly, what are you doing just now?
So now basically I'm a sports masseur, soft tissue therapist. So really lucky, obviously, that I managed to be at a full-time club for like the last 3 years, until obviously COVID struck and unfortunately lost my job. But since then, I've just been going in and around clubs, doing bits here and there, and helping where possible. And it's amazing. Like, I love it. It's such a good job. As I said before, you get the best of both worlds, in that you're in the environment, and you know, the environment that I love. You get to travel, you get to work in all these big stadiums, and get to see the build up that I think most people would, anyone who likes football would give an arm and a leg to be involved in. And you don't have to deal with the pressure of punters.
Like you say, so it's Hearts and St Johnston, to name but a few. So you're getting that front row seat, aren't you?
It is, yeah, it definitely is. And I've been at St Johnston now since Christmas, once or twice a week I go up there, and I've started going at Falkirk just now, and had a few other clubs, and also things are starting to pick up for like the summer now. I've had a few more calls about going at teams in the summer, so I'm actually really excited about what might happen. And I just love working with footballers, I really do. Love finding out like what makes them tick, and just trying to help them. And the buzz I get just now when you help someone and they go out and just play well or score a goal, like that for me is worth more than any pay you can get.
Is it one of the happiest you've been?
At the moment, yeah, definitely is. Definitely is. Like, I love it. And as I say, I'm really grateful for the people that have helped me, because without guys like Liam Fox, who obviously helped me get to Hearts, and other guys that I know who have put my name forward for stuff, without them. And I think that's important for me to realise, because as much as sometimes I don't look too fondly on, you know, football career, probably because of the headspace I was in, I think I do really now look at the people that have helped. And, you know, even when I was with St Johnstone at the Cup final a few weeks ago, and they played against Livingston, and now Fox is the assistant manager at Livingston. So it was such a strange moment to speak to him on the pitch, and I knew fine well, and it's not lost on me, and the fact that I probably wouldn't even be doing that if it wasn't for Foxy helping me get in at Hearts. So it was tough, because obviously I was on the winning team at the end of it, and he was unfortunately on the losing team. So, but you know what, that's just the way it is. Me and him will be pals forever, do you know what I mean? So it's just nice that people have helped and tried to get me in places. And then ultimately when they get you in, it's up to you to do what you do and hope it pays off. And thankfully to this point it has.
What was that Cup final buzz like?
That was brilliant. I think I hadn't been to a single game since COVID, since the very last game in Scotland, which was obviously Hearts against St Mirren, when I think that was on the Friday, and then football got completely stopped. And I've been working at St Johnstone. They played Livingston 2 weeks, I think, before the Cup final, or 2 or 3 weeks before it. I was due to go to that game. I ended up couldn't go on because I was working. And then they played Motherwell the week before it. Again, I was meant to go, couldn't go. And one thing about losing my job at Hearts, I was gutted. I don't think it was so much the job. It was more the people. It was the relationships I'd built up with the players and with the staff. And the thought of not going in there every day and having Nasey and John Souter and that coming in and battering you for the haircut you've had or something you've posted on Instagram. It was all that sort of stuff that I knew I was going to miss. So, yeah, just to lose your job there. And one thing I was really gutted about was that I was going to miss the Hearts Hibs semi-final at Hampden, because that was one we were all looking forward to before COVID struck and the draw was made, and I was buzzing for that game. Like, I couldn't wait for it, and obviously I knew I was going to miss it, and I was devastated. And then I just did honestly have to take a moment when the first game I was at after that was back at Hampden, obviously working for a different team, and then winning. And I just thought, it's mad how football seems to play out these strange scenarios. But no, it was really good. I loved every minute of it. And I'm grateful for them, grateful to St Johnstone for having me there.
And is this the future? Is this just what you see yourself doing for now? Happy enough?
Yeah, I do. I think at some point I've always had a desire to go and live abroad again. So I think I'll do that eventually. And I've always kind of thought that it will be football in some fashion that will take me there. I don't know how that may happen. It will probably be someone that I've played with years ago, maybe goes and manages a team somewhere and maybe go out there. I don't know, but I think that's for the future. I would love to do that, but for the foreseeable future, yeah, just getting back in, working with football teams, working with players. Like, I just love it. I can't get enough of it.
Paul, you've been an absolute pleasure to talk to. Thank you so much for joining me on Soccer Supernova.
No, thanks very much for having me on.
What's up, guys? This is MMA fighter Clay Guida, and I'm not afraid of anyone or anything, but losing my hair was an entirely different kind of fight. So if you're suffering from hair loss like I was, then you gotta check out my boys at Bosley. Pound for pound, they are the champions of hair restoration. That's why I turned to Bosley to get my hair back. The entire Bosley team was so professional and kind from start to finish. All it took was a simple one-day procedure, and I was on my way back to rocking my full hair again. So take it from me. Don't wait if you are thinning or receding. I'm so thrilled with my results, I just wish I would have went to Bosley sooner. It's time to finally knock out hair loss, because the best is yet to come. Check out Bosley today.
When MMA fighter Clay Guida was losing his hair, he trusted Bosley to get it back. Now it's your turn. Get a free information kit, plus get a $250 off gift card when you text SCORE to 203203. That's text SCORE to 203203. Don't wait. Text SCORE to 203203.
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeart Media gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.